Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them.
Disrespect welcomes Gaytan Aru, member of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty and advocate for street people. Gaytan, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. You have been busy, and OCAP has been busy lately with demonstrations on behalf of homeless people.
OCAP, for over the last, last year and a half, has been campaigning around the closure of hostels in downtown Toronto.
You and I have done a number of shows on that.
Yeah, so last weekend, not this weekend, but the weekend before that, Saturday, June 21st, we took over part of Allen Gardens as a protest to the shutting down of shelters. One of the reasons we chose that day is because on the Monday, the University Settlement was shutting down.
Your site had a comment from someone who was staying there.
Yeah, and they were shutting down for renovation, and the city refused to relocate the beds while the renovations were going on.
Are you serious? They just basically turfed everybody, said, we're going to make it better for you, now sleep on the street?
Basically, yes. So, so part of the protest was around that, and around also the targeting of people and Safe Streets Act, the ticketing of people. Some 10,000 tickets were given out last year. We're asking the city, Mayor Miller in particular, to tell his officers to stop ticketing people.
Mm-hmm.
People are having a hard time living.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the protest was to go to City Hall on Monday. We had a breakfast there. About 25 people were there. When I got there, I was given a trespass letter immediately as a result of an action that happened a couple months ago.
So they were waiting for you at City Hall.
So they barred me from Phillips Square and City Hall for a year. They attempted to do that about 3 or 4 years ago, and when we went to court, the judge said that they couldn't do that. It was against my charter.
Do you have the chance to go to court again?
Well, now it looks like I'm going to have to go again. So I decided that I would go in.
Okay.
And as a result, I was charged with trespass and given me a $300 fine, $300 fine that I have to fight starting August 8th.
It seems to be a kind of a squeeze play, this Safe Streets Act, that they've never instituted like a mounted horseman assault on street people or anything, but they just keep upping the numbers and pushing harder. Is that a correct impression? Because I'm not on the street yet.
Well,
anyway.
It's part of, I mean, the city in 2005 introduced what it called the, well, let me back up a little bit. Safe Streets Act is actually a provincial act that was introduced in 1999. The city had tried to introduce a panhandling bylaw, I think it was in 1998, had failed, and then the province kicked in, and then they introduced this new law, which basically, you know, criminalizes people for begging and squeezing on the streets. In 2005, the city introduced its new Streets to Home initiative, and one of the first things they did is they barred people from being able to sleep at Nathan Road Square. And along with that, over the last few years, they've actually hired housing workers who are supposed to go and work with people and house them. So that's one end of the Streets of Homes. The other end is the harassment and intimidation by the police. So there's an active push in the downtown core to remove people from the streets. So Streets of Homes is supposedly housing people. They said it's housed 1,700 people. So they're removing people from the downtown core. Some people are being housed, we're told, in North York, an hour and a half away from here, Etobicoke. Some in transitional housing. Along with that, it was a strong purge by the police through the Streets to Homes Act.
What does the Streets to Homes Act do that allows the police to purge the downtown?
Well, it allows them to give them tickets. The police gave away over $10,000 tickets last year alone through the Streets to Homes.
What's the fine?
The fine varies from $65 to $125.
Ouch. Okay.
And along with that, now what we're seeing is the city's also beginning to dismantle the hostel system in the downtown core.
Yeah.
So those three things together are the city's attempt to remove people from the downtown core, what they call visible homelessness. And that's their attempts to. And this, by the way, is a program that is a American program that comes from a guy called Phil Mangano, who's the homeless czar and Bush's homeless czar. He goes across North America. He's been to Toronto, Vancouver, Calgary, all over the United States, and also in Scotland. He's selling this 10-year plan, and his idea is you target the most visible people in the downtown core, house them, and that'll deal with your
visible homeless problem.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. From his point of view, is this working? I know from your point of view, it's not.
Well, what we're seeing right now is, in terms of the people who are getting housed, one, we don't have the housing. So that's the first thing. The housing
is the biggest problem, yeah.
Yeah. So for instance,
the reasonable housing.
Yeah. We have a situation right now where we don't have a national housing policy. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. The city has just introduced or said that it's expanding the Streets to Homes. $2 million this year, another $5 million next year. And so basically they're claiming that they can deal with homelessness in Toronto with $15 million. So we don't have the affordable housing. Therefore, people are being housed in situations where the rents are too high. They can't.
Are they taking people off the streets and like putting them into $600, $700, $800 apartments?
Well, there's a little bit of that going on. They have what they call rent subs, but not a lot of them. Most are not housed with rent subs. Most are actually housed are on welfare. Sometimes they're put in transitional housing. A place called Fred Victor, for instance, is housing people. But what we're finding is that people just don't have enough money to survive on. So until we have a national housing program, until we have a program, whether it's an EI program or a welfare program that gives enough people enough income to survive, then the issue here, it deals with the visibility, but it can't address the poverty. The poverty is extreme, actually.
So it's an either-or situation. Either you have housing at a reasonable rate, or you have income at a reasonable rate that would address market-rate housing.
You have to have that. You can't. Anyone who lives in Toronto, in what other cities are like. But I mean, someone like me who's employed, I make about $40,000 a year, and when my wife wasn't working, we struggled to pay the rent.
Yep.
Now you can imagine someone on ODSP or someone on social assistance. Social assistance right now, I think people get $560 a month.
Right.
$350 of that is for housing, and $211 for that is basic. So people are left. Assuming their rent is taken care of, which is not always true, they're left with $211 a month to live on, and
travel.
And people just get travel, laundry, you name it. It's an impossible situation. So that's part of the problem. The other problem with Streets to Homes, it's a very, very narrow view of homelessness, right? It just focuses primarily on people who are visible in the downtown core, so on the people who are living on the streets, on the grades. There's very little done for people in the shelters. There's very little done for families and children, which is a large population of homelessness.
They want you ground right down, don't they? And compliant. They want you. It's hard to believe, but it seems that somebody wants you ground right down and compliant before they'll extend a hand.
Well, this is an attempt again to deal with the crisis that's been here since at least 1995.
Yeah.
And it's an attempt to appease. The businesses, residents association, because many of the residents association are quite happy to see some of these shelters disappear, right?
But, yeah.
And also, although the city has openly said that, and actually one of the police officers said that the ticketing of people on the streets doesn't work, informally they continue. We see them on every day. I just got one yesterday from a guy, on Thursday, from a guy who got charged, I think it was $65 for encumbering a sidewalk.
Encumbering a sidewalk.
Yeah, he was,
okay.
He was laying down panhandling on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
So we're seeing this push, this intimidation and harassment. We're seeing a good news story. So whenever the city is asked about, how are you doing with homelessness, the response is, we've housed, 1,800 people.
Yeah.
And it stops there. There's no further kind of like attempt to understand what does that mean. And also, again, this is a program that if you go to the U.S., every major city in the U.S. Would be using this program to say that they're dealing with the problem of homelessness.
So from the point of view of someone like Mangano or someone who's bought into his program, it's working pretty well for them.
Well, for them, yes, it's a good news story. It says, and what they're using also is they're using our language. I mean, we've always advocated that we people need housing first and foremost.
Okay.
If you're going to deal with stabilized people, you have to house them. The problem here is that we don't have the housing.
Right.
The people are being housed in substandard housing. Most of the housing is not affordable, and many of the places are not safe. So that's the problem, what's going on. We don't have a situation, again, where the federal government has kicked in and said we're going to spend X amount of money on housing. We don't have a situation where the province is saying we're going to raise the rates and help with housing. And as a result, we're supposed to believe that somehow $15 million through the Streets to Homes project is going to address a crisis that's been here since 1995.
I can well imagine the kind of housing that they're finding for people, too. 15 years ago, I couldn't make any progress on the list, the waiting list. I didn't know they were selling spaces out from underneath us, but I asked if they had anything in seniors' housing. He said, oh, yeah, up north on James Street, we've got something. And I went up there to a unit that had been a little modified since it had been built, probably built in the 40s, maybe the 30s. And some fellow who lived there was actually good enough to take me up and show me the apartment. And it was a little box with a bathroom in one corner, and it had a little kitchen across one wall, and there was room for a single bed and a table or a couch. Couldn't have both.
Yeah.
Single bed and a table or a couch. And this guy was living in it. And it was hard for me not to show my sorrow in front of the guy because, he had a place and, he didn't really like it, it was his place. And I didn't want to show any disrespect for him. But he was very good taking me up and showing me this. And I just went back and I said, I don't understand how anybody can live there. Why would you offer me a place like that? Well, obviously, because nobody else wants it.
Yeah, I think you touched on something here because the other problem also that's going on in Toronto is that the housing stock, social housing stock that the city has is very old, and the city does not have the money to repair them, to repair the apartments. So we have a serious, serious problem here where across the city we have conditions in some of the social housing that is atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people are actually being moved into some of that housing, some of the streets and homes people. So that's mm-hmm. problem number one. One of the ways that the city is trying to deal with this or attempting to deal with this problem is for instance, Regent Park, Canada's largest social housing. So right now what they've done is they're building, a so-called mixed neighborhood in there.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they've given away a whole bunch of land, 75% condo, 25%. Mm-hmm. But they're using that money to pay for the rebuilding of social housing. It's the same. Lawrence Heights is the same. They're planning to do the same with Lawrence Heights.
Okay.
But lastly, just also is I think that, we have to advocate for housing that we all would live in.
There's a street person's housing development down near Strawn Street.
Yeah, which I know the one. Yeah, I worked there.
Yeah, have you? Which, as far as I understand, it's constructed with rooms around common kitchens. I don't know if you have private bathrooms, do you?
No. What it is that people don't have a private bathroom, don't have a private washroom. It's an open concept. As opposed to Fred Victor, where the six rooms are kind of self-contained.
Right.
The Strawn House is actually a little worse in the sense that it's an open concept. So you have a similar idea where you have an area that will have, let's say, six rooms, and maybe sometimes eight. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And they would share a common area, including the kitchen and the washroom.
Mm.
And then you might have maybe about, seven or eight of those kinds of areas that are separated. So
this doesn't work a lot better?
Well, no, because then everybody has access to the first floor and the second floor. People have guests. People are everywhere. I mean, you have to imagine that you're...
So security is a problem.
So security would be a big problem. I mean, they do have staff there 24 hours a day, but the most that you have your room, which you can lock, which is not that large. I think some of the housing... So, for instance, some of the housing that people are being put in right now is what's called transitional housing. And one of those places is Fred Victor. Another is Strawn House. And these kinds of situations are really, really difficult to live in. You just have to imagine that one person goes into crisis, and everybody else, it would be very, very hard to live there.
Yeah.
And that's one of the places where some of the people from sea storms are being moved into.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, I mean, there's a lot of problems.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a toss-up. I mean, you have to... I mean, I worked at Street City for about 6 months, which has had us... was a similar kind of project, and it was just it's just a big warehouse, right? That was with no walls inside.
That's the impression I got of this place.
Yeah, what we've found, what I've seen is that the most people prefer self-contained apartments.
Yeah.
So there's a place called for sex survivors called Porter Place, just over here on Porter Street, just west of here. That's for sex survivors, and they have self-contained units, and people function much, much better in that kind of environment.
Oh yeah,
and people prefer that. But
I can understand.
But that option is not. And the same with people. Habitat has a whole bunch of housing in Toronto. Most of it is shared housing. And I went to one room where Robert Maurice died. Actually, he froze to death in Toronto here. Last winter
in the stairwell,
and in the stairwell, yes. And I went to the place they lived at, and he shared a room with this other person, and they had to share a washroom with a number of other person, and there were something like 30 people in that house.
Wow.
And that's the unseen poverty that people wouldn't see a lot, right? That people are in there, they're fed, but that's it. See what's going on. People are just living in extreme poverty.
And now, for a momentary break from the serious, Pete Johnson, roll 'em. You've been listening to street health worker and OCAB demonstrator Gaytan Aru, who's braved arrest for protesting the endangerment of homeless people by Toronto's plan to rid the streets of the visible homeless.
Is there a reason we're not arguing for the money, or is it basically a two-pronged argument? We want the money and we want the housing?
Well, we need both, right? We need a base, so that when, you know, that, you know, try and imagine people, everyone's seen what, you know, what's been happening in Oshawa with the CAW and the plant closure and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you just have to imagine that you're one of those workers,
mm-hmm.
and then you find yourself all of a sudden on EI. EI was gutted in 1993, 1994. People get it for less time. They have to work longer to get it, mm-hmm. and they get less money. So
yeah.
when that money runs out, people find themselves then at, you know, collecting welfare, which is even, you know, even more extreme.
Yeah.
And right now, welfare just does not meet people's most basic needs.
Yeah.
And we have to have a system that says, you know, a society that says when we have economic situations where large number of people find themselves unemployed, that they're protected until,
yeah.
you know, we have work for them, until we, you know, and one of the ways of doing that is to ensure that there's housing for them,
mm-hmm.
the decent housing. And the second is that we have to ensure that they have income until they're able to find a job to sustain themselves.
I don't want to trivialize this argument by going too far afield, but there was an article in the Globe the other day, which I'm going to cover as the final of a series of interviews with a lawyer representing a disabled man who was fired by Honda for having chronic fatigue. And the Supreme Court didn't uphold any punitive damages for Honda, who, the article details, hassled him mercilessly. And I've detailed that in a number of shows that I posted on radioforall.net. I almost want to take the Supreme Court judges aside and say, well, look, you know, if this guy was disabled when he quit work, what do you think he is now, by the time he's gone through all this, and you've told him that his disability doesn't count for anything, even if Honda hassles him? Do you all really want to pay, you know, the $1,200 a month on ODSP for these people? Because there are thousands of them, and you don't want to give the employers any disincentive to abusing them. And then, you know, when they finally can't work anymore, you're giving them $1,200 a month, then you want them begging on your sidewalks because they have no place to go? I don't understand the cultural mindset that goes right back to the loss of employment and works right up to where they push you over the edge.
Yeah, no, that situation would be extremely, extremely stressful. And also, I mean, there's a number. The other area that we're moving into right now is a lot of seniors are going to have an extreme hard time in terms of, and already politicians are saying, you know, but that the you know, the population cannot sustain, you know, the
that's frightening. The baby boom hasn't retired yet.
Yes, and they're, and everyone, and so we're seeing all kinds of schemes where people are supposed to get RSPs and et cetera, et cetera. And but the truth is that you know, most seniors right now are suffering in terms of the amount of money that they get to try and survive. Yeah, I think the large discussion that we have to have is we have to have this discussion around the infrastructure that we need to make sure that, as a society, we make sure and ensure that we take care of people who have found themselves in situations that often not of their own making. And I'm thinking again of people at the CAW who are losing their jobs.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of
going to turn Oshawa into a center for poverty.
And Windsor is the same problem.
Yeah.
And also thinking of, you know, when you know, recessions hit in the 1980s and later on also. And we had a situation where that infrastructure was gutted in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that across Canada, North America, England.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to begin to say that we need these things, that we have a right to these things,
mm-hmm.
that these are not quirks or benefits that are given because, you know, it's a charitable thing. We have to make sure that people have a right to these things, and housing and income are essential.
There is a culture of the other around this that Mike Harris seized on and made worse, the sense that we're bosses at GM, or we're workers in the ODSP program, and we could never be on these programs, so these people must be different from us. I don't know how that's addressed except by education one at a time. Do you?
Well, there's that, but we also have to create a political will to say that this infrastructure that was created, I think, since the Second World War, even since the Depression, that people fought for. People were blacklisted because they fought for some of these things.
Yeah.
And we have to recognize that those things were fought for through demonstrations.
So that they were not given to those fighters. Yeah.
Well, they weren't given. These things were not given to us. There was large demonstrations during the Depression, including right here in mm-hmm. Allen Gardens during the Depression.
Yeah.
1933, there were veterans, unemployed veterans who were organizing. 2,000 people came to Allen Gardens, unfolded a banner that said "Heroes of 1914, Bums 1933."
Oh dear.
That kind of stuff.
It's happening today, the same thing.
Yeah.
Heroes of Afghanistan,
yeah.
Bums of,
yeah.
You know, 2008.
Yeah. So, that's that. And what we have to be careful also is when we have, and right now we have a liberal government, and we have a mayor who's considered very liberal in Toronto, Mayor David Miller, who are not talking about these issues at all, who refuse to acknowledge that. Right now we have Deb Matthews, who's going across Ontario, so-called consulting with people around these issues, around poverty reduction. This is not rocket science. These are issues that people have been... They were around 1995 when Harris made those welfare cuts. They were around when the housing was stopped. They can address those issues. The political will is not there. They're not willing to do that. So we're getting these circuses that are going around, asking people to. And I use the expression that Matthews wants poor people to come and bleed in front of her
mm-hmm.
and tell these stories, mm-hmm. horrific stories that she will be hearing,
mm-hmm.
And then she walks away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she just taking a political step up? Is she taking on something that she didn't realize was so big? Where is she in the middle of all of this?
Well, listen, I don't know what to say to that. I don't know.
Join the club, yeah.
I don't know who she is. I do know that, for instance, Smitherman is our MP here.
Yeah.
And he's been around long enough to know what the issues are. And I've never heard Mr. Smitherman talk about welfare raises. And I don't hear him talking about, some of these issues openly. It's not part of this platform.
People who are unavailable for your demonstrations but who nevertheless want to demonstrate their solidarity with you, I gather that they can donate.
Donate is one thing. We always have a hard time raising money. I mean, even this last action that we did on June 21st, we had to raise money for food, and we had to go get blankets and tarps and all that kind of stuff. So
they send the checks to 10 Britton Street?
If you just Google Ontario Coalition Against Poverty or OCAP, mm-hmm. You'll be able to get directly to the website.
What else can they do?
Well, I think they can get involved in terms of in their community and to begin to look around. I think they can look at their own situations, and I think most people that I know that live like myself and my wife, we live from month to month.
Mm-hmm.
We try and pay our bills, and sometimes we fall short a bit. I think many, many people in Toronto and across Ontario live like that.
I recognize the situation. Yeah.
So if that's your situation, I think you have to, in my mind, you have to begin to look. Okay, well, what if there's a scenario where that paycheck doesn't come in, and then have to be, and maybe you should look at what is there for people once that happens.
Yeah.
And I don't want to create fear in people, but it's. It's a really, really dangerous situation, and people get hurt. People really, really get hurt once that situation happens, and that check stops coming in, and all of a sudden you don't have the money for the rent, and all of a sudden you don't have money for the bills, and all of a sudden you don't know where the money's going to come from, and you go and you try and get help, and you realize that, you're in a really, really dangerous situation.
I have a friend in front of the rent bank right now who is praying that the rent bank will come through with the 2 months' rent that they're owing, but doesn't know because the rent bank has forced them to wait until they actually get an eviction notice. And then, that's part of their mandate. I don't know why they force people so far, because people are going to payday loan places every month and paying a hefty fraction of their benefits in interest just to stay housed, and people are paying enormous fractions of their income for housing. You mentioned $560 a month and $350 of it for housing. Well, I don't even know if you can get a room for $350.
We can't.
But that's more than 50% right there, way over 50%. And these people apparently are not in danger of eviction or worthy of an eviction prevention program. They wait until you're being evicted, and then the promise that they give you is they can talk the landlord out of evicting you, which I think is a little close to the edge for a lot of people.
Well, I wouldn't want that situation. I couldn't. I keep telling, I tell people that I work with, and you know, people who come and I help people replace their ID, and I say this. I've been with my wife Catherine now for over 30 years, and wow. If we were put in a situation where you know, we had that kind of stress, it's really, really hard in a relationship. I don't know if we would get that kind go through that kind of stress.
Yeah.
And if we were put in a hostel, I don't know how long we could survive. The relationship could survive. So these are very, very basic things that you know, people live through every day, and people struggle and try and survive. And those who are lucky will you know, sometimes can fall on friends and family for support, you know, either financially or emotionally. But sometimes, you know, once if that situation lasts too long, there's only so much people can do.
Yeah.
And then that puts a lot of stress on those relationships. And then all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, in front of a welfare worker going, I can't make it. I need help. And you realize the help is not going to pull you through.
Yeah. I guess, you know, in Victoria, the homeless people have retained a legal firm to represent them before the BC Superior Court, which is the lowest rung of the BC Court.
Yeah.
That these laws preventing shelters in parks, for instance, are unconstitutional.
Yes.
We're going to wait 6 months or a year for the ruling on that one.
Okay.
Well, I've interviewed the lady, Catherine, the lawyer, Catherine Boyce Parker.
No, I'd heard that was going through, yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to say?
No, other than, you know, that, you know, that people should keep their ears open to these issues of poverty. I think there are things going on right now, you know, in Ontario and Canada and across the world that will eventually affect us greatly, I think. There are food prices, gas prices. I think that the standard of living that we've been living with for a number of years right now will come under attack.
Yeah.
And I think that when that time comes, that it's the poorest of the poor that will pay the price again. And I think that we have to mobilize and get together and demand what is our right.
I've done that interview as well. For better or for worse, the only people who seemed suited to comment on it were CIBC World Markets, but they seem interested in the challenge because, of course, they don't normally take the poor into account when they figure their economic forecasts.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Gaytan, for your time today.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to street health worker and OCAB demonstrator Gaytan Aru, who's braved arrest for protesting the endangerment of homeless people by Toronto's plan to rid the streets of the visible homeless. For those who were concerned about my friend in front of the rent bank, when she got an eviction notice, the rent bank turned her down. Now, I've been frank with you. My feelings are perhaps stronger because I'm talking about a friend, but really, anybody else would be in the same position. Why do we give this money for these programs that pretend to solve a problem and don't? Oh, and my friend, her final notice of eviction was slated for July the 9th. I hope we haven't spoiled your lunch. In case we haven't yet, though, here's Memphis Slim and Every Day I Have the Blues.
Trouble. Well, you know I've had my share. guess I'm moving on down the line. I know ain't nobody worrying. Well, it ain't nobody crying.
Disrespect has been blessed or cursed with email information on everything that's going on in poverty for who knows the next how long. If you're interested, you want a copy of the email, email us at dialogue@inbox.com. Maybe you have it. The one email that I have that should be of immediate interest is the Hamilton Roundtable for Poverty Reduction invites you to attend a community conversation on poverty reduction. On behalf of the Hamilton Roundtable for Poverty Reduction and Hamilton area members of provincial parliament, we would like to invite you and your colleagues to participate in a community conversation on poverty reduction. The Ontario government is developing a poverty reduction strategy, and we invite you to join in on the conversation, share your thoughts and ideas. The email is signed, Making Hamilton the Best Place to Raise a Child. That is Monday, July 14th, 2008, 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Hamilton Convention Center, Albion Room, 1 Summers Lane in Hamilton. Local members of parliament there will be Sophia Agalonitis, Liberal, Hamilton Mountain 1, and Andrea Horvath, Hamilton Center, NDP. Also, Ted McMeekin, Liberal, Ancaster, Dundas, Flamborough, and Aldershot, and Paul Miller at Hamilton East Stony Creek. Light refreshments and bus tickets will be available. To register for the community conversation, please email hrpr@hcf.on.ca. That's hrpr@hcf.on.ca, or by calling 905-523-5600, extension 222. That's 905-523-5600, extension 222. It's signed Liz Weaver, Director, Hamilton Roundtable for Poverty Reduction, and her extension is 244. She's also at lizweaver@hcf.on.ca. Visit www.hamiltonpoverty.ca. That's www.hamiltonpoverty.ca. For more information, or if you require special assistance such as sign language interpretation, please call Ken at the Hamilton Roundtable for Poverty Reduction at 905-523-5600, extension 222. That's Ken at the Hamilton Roundtable for Poverty Reduction, 905-523-5600, extension 222. Thanks to our regular listeners for that information. And of watching city staff pretend to understand what they hear about poverty gets stale after three quarters of an hour, you can drop over to Sky Dragon for the Slam Poetry Session every week, but once a month, where the Toronto poets drop in. This month, we have Spencer Budd, Truth, Sandra DiZeo, and others. It's a great read. There's lots to protest, lots to enjoy. Sky Dragon, Monday, July 14th, 7:30 p.m. on, probably till 10. And now the weekly conversation with blind immigrant in confinement, awaiting submission and approval of a second application for immigration to Canada, Cotter Ballooney.
You have to figure out the Gazette. They're talking about me and put a good article about me yesterday.
Today?
Yesterday.
Oh, all right. I haven't checked it yesterday or today, so I'll have to check it tonight before I go home.
Yeah.
And I'll save it as an email and print it out when I get near a printer. That's good. How much space? Well, first of all, for the people who are listening, yesterday was July the 7th, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's big. So it's like the more than middle size, maybe middle size.
So more than half a page.
Yeah.
And pictures? Do you know?
Picture, yeah.
Oh, okay. So somebody's read it to you, or?
Yeah, my computer.
Your computer reads it to you.
Yeah, my friend.
Okay. Do you get a choice of voices on the computer? Or is it all?
Yeah, kind of like this.
Could be a man, could be a woman, could be young, could be older.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
What do you do with books? Do you prefer Braille? Do you prefer...
I don't know the Braille.
You don't know Braille?
No.
Okay. So you prefer like either books in electronic format that can be read to you, or talking books? Like, do you have facilities to play books on CD or cassette?
I hate them.
You hate them? They just make you sleepy, eh?
Yeah, you know.
Well, that's funny. My mother said that when she was in the hospital. She said they probably put me to sleep. And I was thinking back to when she used to read to me when I would go to sleep, and I was like four years old. I said, well, do you want the books to read you to sleep? She said, no.
Just make me sleepy.
Yeah. So books are not your favorite thing?
No.
Okay.
I like to listen. I don't know. But I can listen a little bit like books, but like it's not like hours and hours.
It's a big job, isn't it? You'd be slow to get through a book, yeah. I tried them too, and I keep falling asleep.
Sometimes 15 minutes is enough.
Okay. I was just finished reading a number of books by Antoine Saint-Exupéry, who wrote the original in French. He was an aviator before the Second World War, delivering the mail to North Africa and in South America before he became a fighter pilot and disappeared in World War II.
Wow.
Interesting, because the originals would be in French, and I thought, maybe Catter would be interested in those.
It's like the books. I have some books here.
Yeah.
Some tech books, but I never listen to them. Maybe more than 5 months.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like me. I borrow books from the library, and I take them back, and then I borrow them again because I haven't started them. It's true. Saint-Exupéry is interesting because he roams all over the world. His plane crashes in the desert. He has to depend on Bedouins to bring him water and get him to civilization. He fights the snowstorms in the Chilean Andes. Interesting stories. And, as I say, the originals are in French, but I'm pretty much done with them now. He'd gone back to the library. I did read those. It took me weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody is for you, it's going to be, like, easy.
Yeah.
Like, typically, you finish more than a week.
Yeah.
But you have to listen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Or you have to keep going back and starting over, which takes longer.
Maybe you can sleep and you continue to talk.
Maybe you can sleep and continue?
Yeah, the tip quarter continue to talk.
Reading books while you sleep, yeah. Then there will be a test in the morning. So, what is happening in Casa Baluni?
Oh, nothing.
Yeah.
Just nothing.
Did you have a meeting with your arranger, the fellow who's going to help you arrange your CD?
No, that's the problem. The guy, he said we're going to be here yesterday.
Oh yeah, but didn't show.
He doesn't show up.
Oh dear.
Yeah, that's what he said. Maybe he won't show up today, maybe tomorrow, after tomorrow, anyway, whenever I have time.
Yeah.
Maybe next week.
Yep, okay. He must be he must be a musician.
Yeah, he's a musician.
Yeah, I'm kidding. I have a brother. Yeah. I have a brother who's a musician.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. He teaches preschool children. He teaches drums. In a local Montessori school stepped up and said, would you like to be our music master? So he's pretty happy.
Yeah. It's so hot to buy it off. I am crazy, man.
Oh, it's hot there now, is it? All right. Well, apparently it's going to get cooler here tomorrow, so maybe day after tomorrow you get cooler, too.
No. I feel tired from the hot weather.
Yeah. Oh.
I have dry skin, man.
Yeah.
My skin can be very dry.
And when it's hot, it's still dry?
Yeah.
Oh. Is it humid where you are, too? Is it damp?
Yeah, it's very humid, too. Yeah,
but it's not good for your skin, eh?
It doesn't help my skin, too.
No.
I don't know. Like, the winter, I was very, I had my skin very dry. And I was okay at the beginning of the summer, but now I feel like it's itchy. You know?
Yeah. Okay. The doctor did not prescribe anything, eh?
Oh, the doctor says, Carl, he said, this is not good for you, you know?
What you're doing is not good for you.
I mean, the place here anymore is good for me. I have to be out.
Yeah.
Because I'm staying all day inside, you know, I have to be out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, either that or you put a chair in the doorway.
I was outside the door, but like just for 1 hour, 2 hours, because it's very sunny. I can't stay in sun more than 15 minutes.
This is a silly question because, I mean, your health is your own affair. Do you have vitamin D?
I stopped to take it. I had it before, but I stopped to take it now.
Money?
No. It's because it says on the radio, they said you can't take it only the winter.
Oh, no, you can take it the summer, too.
But they said if you can stay in the sucks, I don't know.
Well, you're not out in the sun, so, I mean, for you, it's winter all year round.
I can stay outside in the sun from the backyard door. I can stay like this. But not for more than 10 minutes because I can't.
Yeah. So for you, for your skin, it's winter all year long. You should consider taking vitamin D in the summer too. I don't know. That's the answer for the skin.
Yeah. That's why I heard on the radio said they can't take it just in the winter.
Yeah.
But the summer they said.
Well, most people are outside in the summer.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm not outside.
That's like, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not outside, but I can stay in the sun at least 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, 15 minutes are too much, like 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's not a good idea to stay too long in the sun.
Yeah, because I can't, and no more, I don't have no more energy.
Yeah, I hear you.
I feel so tired, man, that's it. Oh, I'm long time, I'm tired, man. I feel like I want to die, man.
Yeah, I hear you. Any work on the book?
No.
Okay.
I stopped.
Okay.
I stop. I can't, Jeff. I can't. That's it. I can't.
Yeah.
Maybe like, and I want like just like a few days ago, I said that's it. I have to study again.
Have to what?
I have to continue to my book.
Yeah.
But I feel like depressed.
Yeah.
And leave me alone. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard work. But I mean, if you treat it as a journal for the, you know, like a draft, a journal of your days, maybe then you have, you know, when it's all done, you don't have just a bad feeling. You have a record you can work from. You can, I don't know. I'm not disciplined as a writer either.
I almost finished it. Can you imagine?
Really?
It's like, yeah, it doesn't live just like
three steps. Wow.
And that's it.
And then you can publish.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's still like maybe 3 steps. And that's it. And like, I couldn't move. Just I feel like.
It's not time to turn it over to an editor, eh?
Yeah.
Could an editor do the last 3 steps? Sometimes they do, you know.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Or maybe I need like it doesn't mean maybe I need like more rest. I want to continue next few days.
Yeah.
A few weeks, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe because you do the book, your load might get a little lighter. You know, you will feel great.
And this is a help. This is a help. If I continue my book and my work, this will help a lot.
Yeah,
at
it
least
is. Yeah.
When you feel like you do something. Actually, now, like a few weeks ago, I feel like I do nothing. Just like, yeah.
You're an ambitious guy. You like to be working.
Yeah, I love to be working. I feel like I have nothing to do. And
yeah. What would you do if your work were done? Would you start new work or would you do something else? Do you have a hobby?
I don't know, but like, I feel like I have nothing to do. Never finish. Yeah. Like, I mean,
okay. Yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah, because like I'm always studying like a new instrument and music and.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Yeah, I feel like, no, I always have something to do, always.
Yeah. So when you're too tired to do something, it's very hard.
When I feel so tired?
Yeah, and you don't want to do something.
No.
But your mind wants you to do something, your heart wants you to do something, then it's difficult, right?
Yeah, it's very difficult sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but like, But always when I feel so tired, I take a nap or just something like that. I feel like, take my shower, I take my coffee, I feel like, yeah, I can't move, I can't do something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I hope to finish my book next, maybe like this year. That's what I hope.
I don't know. I wrote an introduction to a story, and I keep promising myself I will develop it. And I keep running into problems with the benefits, with the income, you know. And I have to file forms, and I have to attend meetings. And then some days I just get so, like you, I get so. And I mean, I can go outside if I want, but I wake up in the morning and I feel so bad about it. I just go, I'm going back to sleep.
That's what happened to me today.
Yeah, me too. And funny, our weather is different.
Yeah, that's what happened to me today. I said, man, I'm tired, go back to sleep.
Yeah, I know that feeling. It's not a good one. It's better when you wake up, but it's not good when it happens, yeah. Well, I have a friend who has the opposite situation of you. She is risking being thrown out of her place. She works for a large retailer who is not doing very well. Mm-hmm. Their costs are going up with the cost of fuel. And their sales are not going up. Their sales are staying the same, which is good. That's not true for all retailers, but their sales are not going up. So they are cutting back the hours of all the people who work for them. So her pay is shrunken, and she has had trouble paying her rent, and the people who are supposed to help her, the rent bank, local rent bank, they've said no. So she has the opposite problem. Yeah, maybe when you get your application in, you two can switch places. She can stay in your place, and you can go outside. I know.
I don't think she won't be happy.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we're all unhappy in different ways, and we're all happy in different ways. I just hope. I hope all of our problems get a little bit more solved than they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Just I want to say to you, like I said to you, on the 20th we have barbecue here.
On the 20th of July.
Yeah, a big, adventure.
Who's invited?
Oh, everybody.
Everybody. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there an address for people to show up?
Oh, yeah, 2157 Center Street.
And what's the street?
Center Street.
2157 Center Street, Montreal.
Yeah.
St. Gabriel's Church, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, big barbecue on the 20th. What time?
After 3, yeah.
After 3 p.m.?
Yeah, we
okay.
Study 3.
All right. Well, if I could attend, I would. I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for a lawyer to free up some money for me. And it has been 2 years. I'm hoping now it's maybe a month. But but I don't think the 20th. I don't think it's going to happen. But I'll look forward to hearing about it.
Yeah.
Maybe you put the hot dog down the little holes on the phone, you know, and it comes out at this end.
Yeah.
And don't forget, you know, some mustard and some relish too.
Yeah, like I said, you can make check up for the Gazette, and you can
see
what the guy said.
I will, and then my listeners will as well.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I got your last interview up, because right after I did the podcast site where I post went down. My show from last week, it didn't go up yet. So your interview has been up. I don't know how many people have got a hold of it with the site down, but your other interview will go up now. Probably tonight.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
We'll talk to you next week, and coming up, the barbecue, yeah.
Yeah, take care, Jay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Don't forget us if you have ideas for the show, things you'd like covered, things you'd like to hear us discuss, dialogue, D-I-A-L-O-G, dialogue@inbox.com. To take us out, Lightning Slim, Rooster Blues.
Oh, well, the little red rooster told the little red hen, I ain't been to see you in God knows when. The little red hen told the little red rooster, you don't come around, daddy, like you. You got to rock tonight, baby. You got to rock tonight, baby. You got to rock tonight, baby. Yes, we got to rock tonight. Oh, well, the old black cat told the little gray mouse, I've got a mind to chase you around this house. The little gray mouse told the old black cat, he said, look up.
frog told a big black snake, come on daddy, let's swim in the lake. The big black snake told the little green frog, mom, I'm gonna lay here on the log. I got to walk tonight, baby. Got to rock a while, baby. We got to rock tonight, baby. Yes, we got to rock tonight. He said, hang around, mama, I'ma get you out the wild. The crocodile said, you're the pink alligator. You better kiss me now, daddy, let me hang around. Baby, got to rock tonight, baby. We got to rock tonight, baby. We got to rock a while, baby. Yes, we got to rock.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near the internet. Disrespect is streamed live at http://cfmu.mcmaster.ca. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.